James 3. Now I want to read verses 1 to 6. We looked at verses 1 and 2, and we'll continue between 3 and 6 this time. James says this, "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is perfect man. He also is able to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a small member and boasts great things. See how great a forest the little fire kindles? And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire by hell." I understand that in England there is an epitaph on a tombstone that reads like this. "Beneath this stone, a lump of clay, lies Arabella Young, who on the 24th of May finally began to hold her tongue." I don't think I'd want to put that on my wife's tombstone, but it tells something about old Arabella, that she had a little problem with the tongue. You know, the tongue is a very important part, but I haven't seen your tongue since I've been here, any of you. I didn't see your tongue. You don't show me your tongue. You know why? It's a very generic thing. You've seen one, you've seen them all. A tongue is a tongue. Can I say it? Yeah. I never heard a love song about the tongue, did you? Oh, I've heard about the turned-up nose, you know, turned-up nose, turned-down hose, flapperous, or one of those. Nose is something we look at as something special. Some have big ones, some have little ones, some have cute ones, and whatever. Lips. Lips sweeter than wine. Remember that one? Yeah? Eyes. Spanish eyes. Ears. Has ears like flowers, you know. But I never heard anybody saying anything about the tongue, you know, because a tongue is a tongue is a tongue, you know. Well, that doesn't mean that the tongue is not important. The tongue is a revealer of whatever I'm doing. It's a revealer of what I'm thinking. What we think or what we're concentrating on is determined by our tongue sometimes. A person who's doing something, got something very exciting, that's all they can talk about. Oh, I just got a new whatever, and my new computer, y'all know the new program I have. What I'm thinking, what I'm interested in, what I'm concentrating on, my tongue shows it. Remember Michael Jordan? When he'd go to the basket, he'd go, might bite his tongue off, but concentration, he didn't realize he was doing it. Concentration. The tongue told it. A tongue tells what we like. If I don't like you, stick my tongue out at you. Yeah? So it tells what I like if I stick my tongue out. If it tells how I feel. You go to the doctor and he says what? Stick out your tongue. You know? He wants to know. Because your tongue tells how you feel. Well, the tongue is very important. Not only the organ, but the speech. What I say indicates something about me. It tells what's inside, you know. You step on somebody's toe and they yell out whatever it is that they yell out, and they say, "Oh, you made me do that because you stepped on my toe." No, it wasn't that. Stepping on your toe spilled out what was inside. As though I were carrying a glass of water and you jostled my elbow, what would come out of that glass? Only what's inside, you know. And so it's true of the tongue. The tongue tells what's inside when under some kind of pressure. And people will judge us by our tongue. Sometimes it's not a good indicator. Sometimes you say something and you don't really mean to, you know. I didn't mean to say that. I didn't mean it quite that way. Or you say it something and somebody misunderstands what you said. And the reason for that, of course, is that you haven't taken care to say it plainly and to say exactly what you meant. Sometimes we need to think things over before we speak it out. There's a good rule in carpentry, at least. Measure twice, saw once. Well, we could say that too. Think twice and speak once would be a good idea. People can be hurt by our tongue as well. But you say, well, what I said was the truth. Well, just because it's truth doesn't mean you have to say it, you know. Well, people can be hurt. Some things are best left unsaid. A still tongue makes a wise head. That's one of my mother's sayings. A still tongue makes a wise head. That's a good idea. Yeah. You don't have to say it just because you know it. I remember one time I was told that by a teacher. Third grade. That's my favorite grade. Melanie said, did you ever have a pain right here? I said, yeah, I think I did once in the third grade. Well, in the third grade, I learned quite a few things. And I heard that from a teacher. We used to have opening exercises. And when you open the thing, whatever we did in the class, sometimes the teacher would read a story, a chapter by chapter, or sometimes they read the Bible. Sometimes we sang, always sang the national, whatever. Well, we did certain things. Well, this one teacher had an idea. If you have a joke or a riddle, come up front and say it. You know, kind of get us to train us how to stand up and say things. And I didn't do it. I was very, very shy. And then one day I said, I'm going to do it. My brothers, Ed and Egghead, had told me, you know, they tell jokes. Oh, I heard this joke. Yeah, no, I listened. And so I thought, I'm going to tell this. So it wasn't kind of iffy. So I stood up in class and said it and went back and sat down. And there were a few snickers here. And the teacher said, some things are just as well left unsaid. Well, that stays with me. It shouldn't do that. We need to guard our tongue, guard our speech as to what we say. What talent do you have? Well, John Wesley was preaching on talents, the parable of the talents. Remember, the one guy took his talent and he hid it. He buried it. And after he had preached, some lady came to him and said, Mr. Wesley, I have a talent. My talent is to speak my mind. And he said, I think God wouldn't mind if you buried that one. We have to watch what we say. You know. Now, humans are the only creatures that God made who can communicate with speech. I know some animals, they have grunts and squeals, and an animal says, you know, squeals and they all run away or whatever. But they're not talking. They're not sitting around discussing philosophical issues every night or whatever. You know. So, but it's humans, and humans have a problem with that organ, the tongue. You know, there's a safety lock on it. Yeah, your tongue is a deadly weapon, and it always comes with, just like guns, comes with a safety lock. You know what that safety lock is? Bite your tongue. Keep it from getting out of there. Your teeth keep it in, and your tongue can keep it still. Yeah. So James has in mind, all through this epistle actually, talking about the tongue, how we should express ourselves. Verse 1, if you want to move back to your chapter 1, you'll find verse 19, he says this. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Verse 26, if anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, he deceives his own heart. 2:12, speak and so do, as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. 4:11, do not speak evil of one another, brethren. He who speaks evil of his brother judges his brother. 5:9, do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. So this is not new to James' idea. This whole book could be summarized, I think, in so speak and so do. The context, of course, remember from the last time, maybe, he says, my brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive the stricter judgment. So verse 1 says, teachers are judged more severely than those who are not. That's his context right here about the tongue. So in 2 to 5, he talks about the discipline of the tongue. Now I'm on the notes out of the introduction. The discipline of the tongue. He has said in verse 1, teachers are judged more severely. He's saying here in verse 2 that no teacher is faultless. The exhortation is in verse 2. It says, For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. We all Christians, I think he's saying, not just all teachers, we all stumble. We all say things and do things we shouldn't do. And if any man masters his tongue, then he is a perfect man. He is a mature man. Now, isn't that simple? Just take care of that one little item, that one little thing, your tongue, and you're mature. Isn't that great? Well, that's what he's saying. You won't fall into such things as angry words and misrepresentations and falsehood. You'll be a mature. The word mature there is really to reach your goal. The goal that God has for you is to reach that maturity, controlling your tongue and controlling your entire body. Now, he gives two illustrations of that we are to control the tongue. The two most obvious things that they knew about was a living creature and the largest man-made vehicle of the day. Of course, Hummers weren't invented by that time. But the living creature and the largest man-made vehicle. The first one is the living creature, the horse. The horse and the bit. Now, he doesn't use the camel. He doesn't use the donkey. He doesn't use the ox. They were pretty docile animals. And he also doesn't use the plow horse, because the plow horse was pretty docile, too. I don't think he means plow horse. I think he's talking about the spirited steed, you know, the military horse. Wouldn't be a docile horse. You don't want that kind of thing. You want a horse with a will. You want a horse that has a mind of his own, and then you have to conquer that, break his spirit without breaking his will, or break his will without breaking his spirit. You want him to do his thing, but you want him to do it under your direction. That's what he's saying. So they put bits in their mouths. That's all he's saying. You put a piece of metal in his mouth, and when you turn him in battle, you need to turn here quickly or there to keep from getting killed yourself. And so that's what you do. So you take a bit, you put it in the horse's mouth, and you turn him. Turn the whole body. That little piece of metal will control 1,000 pounds of horse. And the point, I think, is simple, and you probably have already figured it out. Control the mouth, and you control the whole body. Control your tongue, and you've controlled the entire body. And the one who doesn't control that tongue, you can be sure that whether you see it or not, the whole body is out of control. The next illustration he uses is the ship and the rudder. This is the largest man-made vehicle. There were some large ones that plied the Mediterranean. Well, Paul was on one, remember? It had 276 passengers there and carried the cargo as well. So there were some pretty large things. And the size was one of the problems. How are you going to turn a big old ship like that? Well, you turn it with a little rudder. Sometimes they were single paddles, but mostly they were double paddles connected by a crossbar. And that's what turned the ship. That one little rudder would turn the ship. But also the problem they had, not just the size, but they had the problem of the hostile winds, you know, the winds that were contrary to them. And Paul experienced that also in Acts chapter 27. He says when the wind came and just broke everything down, and they were at the will of the wind, and they couldn't even control it even then. So the rudder was used to control that, and the rudder is equivalent to the tongue, as we're talking about. And this, I think, is pictured best, in my mind, by the German Bismarck, the battleship Bismarck. When World War II started, Germany didn't have much of a navy, you know, being inland like that, the British ruled the seas. But the Germans had this big battleship Bismarck, and that thing was going around and wreaking havoc. And so the big thing they had for the Navy to do, British Navy to do, was to sink the Bismarck. Well, that was easier said than done, as powerful as that thing was. But it turns out that the crew of the Bismarck scuttle the thing themselves. Do you know why? Well, because one lucky torpedo hit that rudder, right, smack dab, and just ruined it. And the ship wasn't able to move. And they were trying to keep from letting all the information that was on the ship and the details of their building and so forth, they scuttled it themselves. But it was done by the rudder. Hit the rudder, and you got it. So the rudder was that important to them. And the point, of course, is this. Control the rudder, control the ship. Now, you wondered what I was going to do with this? I'm not sure this is large enough, but the key is very simple. You put bits in the horse's mouth. Why? Because they're stubborn. You put a rudder on a ship. Why? Because it has adverse conditions. It's so large, we need something to control it, and it has the wind blowing, adverse conditions come, and it needs some kind of a rudder. The tongue is the same thing. We put a tongue, the tongue controls the body, and because we are both stubborn and we have adverse conditions. And we shouldn't say to ourselves, well, I say things because the things around me. No, no. The tongue can control us, can help us in that application as well. So the two illustrations help us to understand the potential that the tongue has. But then he also mentions in verses 5 and 6 the destructiveness of the tongue. The reason the tongue must be controlled is because the tongue is so destructive, or at least it can be. Now, the destruction is stated, he says in the end of verse 5, see how great a forest a little fire kindles. A little match can set a fire. I was in the Cotton Bowl in 1972. Campus Crusade for Christ had some kind of one of their pushes, and they were there. And I was there sitting on the ground. I could get down and get back up in those days, sitting on the floor of the Cotton Bowl, and all around, the place was filled with people, young people mostly, and everybody had a candle, and you know how that is. Somebody had a lighter or a match or something, and it went here and here and here and here, and so they said, okay, you people, you lighters, light a candle. And now you people have to get a light from other candles. And so nobody light their own. You have to get it from these others. And you can just see it. It was great to watch that go all around the stadium. And pretty soon the place was lit. They turned the light out, of course, all the lights, and just filled it, see the thing go. Well, that's what one little match can do. Right? And so he's saying here that one little match can light a whole forest. You know? One casual remark can cause a firestorm of trouble. And once it's started, it's hard to stop. Sometimes it doesn't stop until it's out of fuel. And you know what the fuel is with the tongue and the talking? The fuel is ears to listen. And so when it runs out of fuel, it'll stop. So we have to stop listening to those things. Then the fire will stop. Well, that's the destructiveness stated. But it's illustrated by the tongue. He says, our tongue is set in our members, a world of iniquity, and it defiles the whole body. So what he's saying is the tongue is set in the body, and then it sets on fire the course of nature, he says. It's really the wheel. It sets on fire the wheel of nature, the wheel of our lives. And it's like the wheel turns, it goes round and round. And the course of our life goes round and round. And the tongue, he says, sets it on fire. Once the tongue does its thing, once the words get out, their consequence then inflames the entire life. You know, when you say something wrong, you ever say something, you knew you shouldn't have said it, and you didn't set it right, and then it festered in you, and just, oh, man, I've said it, and now look what's happened, and then you begin to think about it, and think about it, and the more you think about it, the worse it gets, you know, that kind of thing. Well, that's what happens, and the whole course of your life can change because of something you said. That's what he's saying. It sets the fire in the whole course of nature, and then where does he get his fuel? Where does he get his start? It's set on fire by hell, by Gehenna. Yeah. That's what he's saying. So what he's saying then is that this tongue can be very destructive. Even though it's powerful, it can be used for good and should be used for good, as we talked about here, praising the Lord. Praise the Lord, all my soul. We ought to be doing that. We ought to be using the tongue for that purpose and not for the purpose of tearing others down and building fires that can't be quenched. So, conclusion then. What shall we say? Well, watch your tongue. Bite your tongue. Train your tongue. Train your tongue to be used for good and not for evil, to glorify the Lord.